Welcome to the hottest podcast around. Good Things Come in Threes, with your expert panel of hosts, Pastor Jack Horner, Pastor Liz Fry, and Pastor John Brock.
Welcome to the podcast Good Things Come in Threes. This is a podcast of Trinity Lutheran Church in Camp Hill, Pennsylvania, and I am Pastor Jack Horner, and I'm here with my able colleagues, Pastor John Brock.
Well, hello there.
And Pastor Liz Fry.
Hey, friends.
And we are really super excited because this is, believe it or not, now going to be season two of this podcast, season Woo-hoo! Two, episode one. And so we thought what we would do for this particular podcast is just kind of do a wrap up of the summer of kind of what we've been going through, what we've been thinking about, what we've been praying about, what we learned, and what we're excited about as we come into next year. So have at it, guys. What do you think? Did you do anything exciting this summer?
Oh golly, so many exciting things happened this summer. For me, I'm still unclear about whether or not this is exciting or stressful. We got a new puppy and Taylor is still in the stage of being a puppy. So she, is naughty,
being a Labrador puppy for that matter, right?
Yes.
So you have about another 2 or 3 years
of
puppydom for labs.
So. And she's too smart. That's the problem.
Okay.
We're realizing that we got a dog that was too smart for us.
Well, that's what usually people say about Taylor Swift.
And friends, you should also know that our Taylor is named after the Taylor Swift.
The Taylor Swift. That's very exciting.
We are big Taylor Swift fans. We love her so much.
So what's the main issue you're having with Taylor now at this point?
She's teething right now. So her mouth is on everything that her mouth shouldn't be on right now.
Yeah. I had a golden retriever that ate a carpet and a sofa, or at least a portion of a sofa, the right top side. A corner of the sofa, the whole thing. So that pretty much ruined that sofa, but thank God for Afghans, you know,
they just cover it up,
just throw it on the corner and just kind of go with it, because you're not going to spend another, you know, $800 or whatever on a sofa. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. So we had that sofa and that dog for a while, but became the best dog ever.
Yeah.
When she turned 4. So
yeah.
Good luck with that. That's
she is. She's going to be a fabulous dog. That's what right. I'm reminding myself during these struggles.
Yes, that's exactly that is exactly what you have to do.
And she's so freaking cute.
Yes. Very cute. Yep. We did get a chance to meet her, and she is very, very cute. Yeah. And our cat turned 1. So our cat is no longer a kitten. Juju Smith-Schuster, named after Juju Smith-Schuster, is a cat that we got last year, and it's just a wonderful, wonderful cat. Again, very, very smart, very cute.
So cute.
Yeah, wants to go outside, but we don't let him go outside, because we have found that he's quite good at catching birds. And considering that we are feeding the birds and actually luring them closer to the house, we thought that, well, that's cruel to do that. So we're keeping Juju now in the house, trying to turn him into a house cat, complete house cat now at this point.
Good call. Way to care for God's creation.
Well, we do. We love feeding our birds. That's a thing. It's a thing I got. I just love feeding the birds. I love watching them at the feeder. I love watching them at the fountain. And it's just, actually, I could say that was kind of a fun thing to do in the summer, although for a portion of the summer, I don't know if you heard, but they were recommending for people not to feed the birds. But I heard this is what they think it was. And this I got from somebody that knows a lot about birds. Oh, here's Juju right now. There he is.
Sneak peek, friends.
He just jumped right up. What they think it was that the birds were eating the cicadas, and the cicadas, because remember all those cicadas came out?
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. That the cicadas were causing some type of she's Liz is laughing because the cat
sorry, we're just getting like cat butt right now. Am I allowed to say that?
Yeah, sure. Why not? I'm just surprised it didn't come from Pastor Brock instead of you. Usually that's one of his. So they think it was the cicadas because that this whatever disease, mystery disease, emerged at the same time as the 17-year cicadas came out. And then it disappeared as quickly as it came out when the cicadas went back into the ground.
Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah. So it was like a month and a half where they're like, we don't know what's happening. But then it turned out just fine. So we're back to feeding our birds, which we're really, really excited about because we enjoy doing that.
At our house, we're actually feeding the squirrels, not so much the birds. Not intentionally, but
yeah, I know about that. We're in a new house which didn't have any big trees around it, so that means we don't have the squirrels.
Oh, anymore. Sure, yeah.
So this has actually been a nice time to feed the birds, because usually that's something I always have to contend with. You know, where do you place the feeder so that the squirrels can't jump?
Yeah,
can't jump on it and all that stuff. So that's always a struggle, but. The people at the Wild Birds Unlimited, where we usually get our seed from, they're really good at finding ways, creative ways to, you know, stop the squirrels from getting the seed, because that can get to be really expensive. You know, I mean, those squirrels can like do a day and a half. Well, yeah, I'll tell you, and they can do a whole in a day and a half. They can take all of that seed away. It's just it's for the birds. So anyway, what else did you do?
John, I've talked a lot. I'm going to let you share.
I took a couple of trips. They weren't, I hesitate to call them vacation because they were both more like family obligations. In June, we went, we drove to Florida for a wedding, a cousin of Marianne's. One of his daughters was getting married. So we drove down to Florida, or excuse me, I drove to Florida, and Marianne and her mother and my sister-in-law and her husband all flew down to Florida. I picked them up at the airport, and we went to the wedding and did a few other things. My sister-in-law and brother and her wife are, excuse me, her husband, they are very well known in the beer drinking world. And so, we had to visit several brew pubs in the area. Of course, we also went to worship at, Castle Church, which is a Lutheran congregation that meets in a brew pub. The brew pub is actually their building. And it's a really cool concept. They have, it's a working brewery. But they also have and the brewery is what supports the mission and ministry of the congregation. So it's a really cool concept, and it's a really fun congregation. Marianne and I have worshiped there several times, but we did that. The wedding was nice. I'm going to strive to not speak disparagingly of a different denomination. However, my cousin-in-law's daughter got married in a church of the Southern Baptist Convention, and the youth pastor that presided at their wedding spoke for the entire 20 minutes. There wasn't really any liturgy, but that's because they're a non-liturgical church, and that's fine. But the thing that just kind of got to me is that he used 1 Corinthians 13, that great passage of love. He used that as a definition of what God means love to be, and that that's the type of love that should be their guide in their marriage.
Well, I've never heard that wedding sermon ever before.
Never.
Oh, yeah. I think the blood was running down my cheeks from me biting my tongue so much from standing up and saying, excuse me, that passage is talking about agape love, not human love. Agape love is as those of us who know Greek know that agape love is the love that God has for humanity, and that there are several different words in Greek that can be defined, that can be all translated as the English word love. She's a very nice girl, and I'm sure her husband is also very nice, and I wish them the best.
and hope that they don't listen to podcasts, I guess.
So the next time I see Sydney, I'll explain to her. Okay, you know what the pastor said? Here's my interpretation.
There you go.
But I got to run back to Chicago for a few days. It was fun to see. It was good to see my relatives that I saw. On the reason that I went back was unfortunate. One of my cousins passed away. Happened to be my cousin. So on each side of my family, on my mom's side and on my dad's side, I had a cousin who was born in the month of January, the same year that I was. And so my cousin Dominic was born 18 days prior to me. Oh. And he unfortunately passed away from some other illnesses. It was really good though to my sister drove down from Wisconsin, and I got to see her, and I got to see my other cousins that are in the area, or most of my other cousins that are in the area. So that was nice, but it was a real quick trip, you know, one day to drive out, one day to be there, and one day to turn around and come back.
Yeah, but that is quick. That's a little bit of a quick trip.
Yeah.
How far is Chicago from here? A drive, isn't it?
It's about
like 10 hours, 11 hours.
And 10-ish hours, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I had a nice summer as well. Obviously, we had a lot going on with the staff changes and bringing on staff members, and so we have Moses Caviche who is coming on board. Actually, came on board 3 days ago for Faith Formation. I'm really excited to be working with him, and I think we're going to see some really great things come out of that. Aspect of our ministry. He's got a lot of energy and a lot of great ideas, and he's a good listener, and I just think it's going to be really super, super for us. I'm looking forward to seeing how that all plays out. But of course, this past August, I was off a little bit. I had my mini sabbatical the month of August, and did some things that were good to be able to do. One, take some time for reading. And I was able to read two books. I wanted to get to three, but I was able to do two. You know, when you're tired after hiking and all the time in the campground, it's a little hard to just sit down and read.
Down to read and suddenly your eyes are closed. Asleep.
Well, yeah, there's that. But actually, the one book turned out really kind of cool because it was called Canoeing the Mountains. It's a book I had had for some time. Christian Leadership in Uncharted Territory by Todd Bolzinger. He's at Fuller Seminary. He's a Presbyterian at Fuller Seminary. And he interposes the Lewis and Clark expedition, which we basically kind of drove that direction.
Oh, that's
the
cool.
Lewis and Clark thing. And with the application of how they had to adapt as they went into this unknown territory.
Oh, sure.
And of course, he applies that to the modern church and how we need to adapt to the unknown and the new age in which we are all living. And he wrote this actually before, before the last 2-3 years. So it has a lot of applications even today. And then the second book that I read was The Post-Quarantine Church, 6 Urgent Challenges That Will Determine the Future of Your Congregation. Boy, that sounds really ominous.
It does.
And that's by a guy named Tom Rainer. who does a lot of church consulting work and is always kind of, I guess you would call them a futurist, right? Where you're kind of looking into the future and trying to see.
Sure, let's call them that. Yeah.
What are the trends that, you know, what are the trends that you have to be aware of that are coming down the pike? You know, some of that is guesswork, but a lot of it is also based on kind of, I don't know, it's kind of common sense that, oh, you know, gee, this is probably going to happen, you know, or we're going to have to be aware of that.
He looks at a lot of like statistics and then kind of projects trends based on that. So he is like some data driven stuff too, right?
Exactly. So it's like another equivalent. I guess there are three big writers like this. It's Rainer, Gallup. Everybody knows Gallup, and Gallup does a lot of church stuff. Actually, I'm going to say four. The Pew. Pew also does a lot of that stuff. And Barna, who's an Episcopalian, he does a lot of that stuff as well. So he identified these are the things that the churches are going to really need to engage in. And some of these people have heard before, because I think when we did a podcast where we talked about what did we learn from COVID, they fit directly into that. One was to find new ways to gather, right? It's not necessarily going to just be in the building, but how do we gather in other places, whether it's coffee shops or our homes or other retreat settings or something like that. Seizing the digital opportunities. And part of my sabbatical, I was able to have a great conversation with Pastor Mike Householder, who is the lead pastor of the largest ELCA congregation in West Des Moines, Iowa, Lutheran Church for Hope. And one of the things that he shared with me, it was really wonderful. The hospitality was just fantastic. And he gave, three hours of a Friday morning for us just to be engaged in conversation. It was just really, really awesome to be able to, sharpen everything by just asking a ton of questions about their ministry. He asked me questions about our ministry. I told him some things that we were doing. He was like, that's a great idea. I got to write that down. You know, and of course I was getting all sorts of ideas from him as well as a really great practitioner of ministry. But seizing the digital opportunities, they've done a great job of that. And he's actually challenging his staff that's involved in their digital ministry or their online ministry and saying, okay, what's next? You know, everybody's saying the church needs to be more digital. How are we supposed to be more digital? What are those ways? What does it look like? So he's really kind of pushing his staff to say, what's the next thing? What does it need to be? And this is a guy that has one of the most popular podcasts popular religious podcast in the country at this point. So, but just really, you know, that's a great thought. How do we connect locally? That's the third thing he says, you know, the connecting with the community that is around your church. How do we connect closer to Camp Hill as well as the surrounding West Shore community? He also says a fourth was encouraging prayer. You know, we got to go deeper and harder into prayer. And that's a real challenge, I think, for us as pastors, as well as for people involved in worship and faith formation. How do we go deeper in our prayer life and connecting and having that personal relationship with Jesus? He also talked about reimagining facilities and how the facilities are used. And I know we did a lot of that just before the pandemic and during the pandemic. And I'm sure we're going to continue to do that after the pandemic as we look at.
Sure.
What are the next phases that we kind of go through? And then making changes that last and make a difference in the world. You know, how do we do things differently so that we can really impact and transform lives? And I think those are all great things for us to really think about and to reflect on. And I think even to kind of work toward, because, you know, the church has an opportunity to be able to share some really good news in a really crappy news cycle, you know, and really tough times that a lot of people are facing. And we have an opportunity to be able to share hope with people. So anyway, that's, you know, that time that I was able to spend with him, and just kind of, I also met with other staff members, which was kind of neat too. And just to get a sense of their ministry and some of the things they're doing, They have a lot of different care ministries, both with folks that are dealing with addictions as well as people that have gone through divorce and the loss of a loved one, and you name it. They have different groups that are there to be able to help minister to people through that. So it was a really great conversation with him. It was great to see his church, meet his staff members, and again, their hospitality was really super. One of the nicest things that happened was the night that we arrived, the person who had met us in the church sent the maintenance guy out to us. Because, you know, they told us where they wanted us to park. We had a RV camper and they told us where to park. And it happened to be, and I didn't know this, but it happened to be near an electric source. And of course it's like 95 degrees, you know, because it was kind of cold. It was kind of hot as we went out. And those campers, they just build the heat up, you know, you can open up all the windows. It doesn't matter. Well, the guy comes out at like, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock at night and says, hey, would you guys like some electricity? Sure. You know, so he hooked us up with electricity. We turned on the air conditioner. We had a pleasant night sleeping, you know, instead of being, you know, instead of sweating. And then we were able to go into the church early in the morning because they open up. I think they opened up at like 6 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, wow.
They're already in there at 6 o'clock. So my son and I went over and they were able to find a shower in the building. This is a big facility, but they only had one place where they had kind of showers that could be used. So we were able to get some fresh salads for our meetings. And then my son worked that day in the church. They gave him a room with Wi-Fi and, you know, he was good until 5 o'clock. So it was a really great trip. It was a great conversation that I had with him. And then the third part of it after the reading and meeting with Pastor Mike was continuing out with my son to Yellowstone National Park and the Grand Tetons National Park. And it was amazing. There is no place in the world like Yellowstone. The geological, the geothermal forces at work underneath the ground there, it's nuts.
It's like another world. That's what I thought of. It felt like another world.
It is another world. I realized why like NASA goes to Yellowstone all the time, right? Because you have this bacteria living in these hot springs and hot pools and sulfur. I mean, sometimes you went past these sulfur things, you wanted to throw up because it was the smell of rotten eggs that was so strong. It was like, yeah. Oh my goodness, this is terrible. But there's things living in it, you know? And so they look at that and they're like, okay, we should be, you know, we need to learn how do these organisms live in this environment, because it's probably going to be similar to some environments on other planets.
Right.
And that's why they want to be able to see that and understand that and see how that works. But yeah, there is no place on earth like there. They have over 400 geysers. And some of them like, you know, well, it hasn't gone off in 15 years, you know. You know, one that we saw, there was a plaque that said, okay, it could erupt in 10 hours. Between 10 hours or 5 days. No, I'm sorry. It was 5 hours or 10 days. Yeah. And we happened to be there when it erupted.
Wow.
And in a way it was cool. more spectacular than Old Faithful.
Sure. I mean,
it was thicker and wider and just, you know, went crazy. I think Old Faithful is so popular because you can always count on it. You know, every 90 minutes it's going to go off. But some of these other ones, I mean, it's just amazing to think of just how they just, it builds up and, you know, all this water goes through like an opening that's like 4 inches. Yeah,
that whole geothermal basin is just an amazing ecosystem. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. When when you go for a hike, you're just walking for a hike and you go, you know, you're on a trail and you look off to the right and the ground is smoking.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
there's no hole there. It's just smoking. Yeah. It's just, you know, coming up, you know, and
you have the thought, wait, am I in Centralia? No.
Yeah. Right. That's probably a lot like that, actually. Yeah. That's probably a lot like that, but it was fascinating. I mean, it was really fascinating to see, and all the wildlife there too just amazing. I mean, I had never seen an elk before live.
Oh, wow.
I saw an elk. I saw bison. I mean, bison are all over the place.
Did you get stopped while the bison crossed the road at all?
Yep. That happened as well. Yep.
Bison.
Yeah.
Did you get a chance to try any buffalo while you were out west?
We did.
Yeah.
We did. We had some bison. We bought some ground bison meat and had bison burgers a couple times. Yep. Yeah. It was very good. It's very good. It's drier. It's dry. It's kind of dry and a little different than.
Yeah. It's got a different kind of a taste. It's not bad, but
it's not. Yeah. It's not. Yeah, it's
definitely not beef. It's definitely not cattle.
Right. And it's not gamey either.
Right.
You know, like if you have deer meat or something like that, it can be a little gamey. It's not that at all.
Yeah.
It's its own kind of flavor, really. Yeah. But saw pronghorn antelope, coyotes. What else did we see? Black
tourists doing stupid things.
That's a great question. Yes, I did see tourists doing stupid things. You know, there are a couple places in the park where there's a lot of water features and a lot of geothermal stuff going on, and they created boardwalks so that you can walk past all of these things, but you're not supposed to get off on the boardwalk. And there were a couple places where we noticed a footprint here or there, where somebody had done something stupid, but we didn't see anybody doing anything dumb with like the animals, like getting out at the, with the too close to the buffalo or anything like that.
The summer that I worked out at Yellowstone, the staff used to kid that people would come to the park and they would leave their common sense at the door, at the borders. like you just said, we would see people walking around the geyser basins, getting off of the pathways, getting up close to them. The summer, now this was 40-ish years ago, but had heard a story of some parents who saw this herd of bison. So they stopped, they took their little child, put it on the back of a bison, took a photo.
Yeah, that's a bad idea.
Yeah, people don't, because they think that, oh, well, it's a national park, so all of these animals must be tame.
Yeah.
And they're not.
No.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, they're not, no.
Of course, then there was also the story of the full-size GM van that had a run-in with a moose one evening, and the moose got up and walked away, but the van was totaled. So,
we were lucky. I had just said to my son, you know, we're probably not going to see any moose, and we were on a trail in the Grand Tetons, and all of a sudden there's a mother moose. A calf in front of us that had just come out of one of the alpine lakes.
Oh, wow.
And I actually have video of the moose kind of just looking at us, and we kept our distance.
Yeah. Yep.
And said, let's slide off the trail so they don't have like a straight shot at us, you know, behind the trees. And we kind of looked at them, and then they kind of just meandered off back into the woods. But that was very, very cool. That was very cool. Cause I didn't think we were going to see, I didn't think we were going to see them, but
I'm jealous. I always wanted to see moose, but every time I went to Yellowstone, and I never saw them. And I'm so jealous.
Yeah. It was pretty cool. It was very, very cool. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I was looking, the one I didn't see that I was hoping to see, we didn't see any wolves, but they're very skittish, you know, down in the Lamar Valley there. And you gotta be real. You basically have to kind of sit there and wait. And the people that have the real good binoculars and the scopes and all that stuff, the cameras, you know, they're the ones you got to watch, because when they start getting excited, they're seeing something. But a couple days before we went into the Lamar Valley, they said that they found a grizzly that was eating the carcass of a bison that had died. Now, I don't know if something killed the bison or if it just died, but anyway, they said a grizzly was coming, you know, going up into the mountains and then coming down and feasting on this bison. And then for 2 days, and then 2 days after that, the wolves came down and were doing the same thing. But by the time we got there, it was all pretty much done, you know, with the animals. Yeah. They had cleaned it off. And evidently, because the hide is so, you know how they have the hump, the bison have the hump.
Yeah.
It's so tough that they can't get it. You know, it's hard for them to get into that part of it. Hmm. So you've got like the head is intact. And then they strip everything else, you know, from the bison as they're eating. So anyway, it was beautiful. Yellowstone is beautiful. The valleys, every part of it, the waterfalls, the geothermal stuff. The Tetons are amazing because you have these things that look like the Alps with no foothills. It's a plain, and then these rocks just go straight up. And the last day we were there, my son wanted to do a strenuous hike. And so we did 3,000 feet incline for that hike. And it was the after summit day, you know, for Kilimanjaro. This was the hardest hike I've ever done.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was crazy. It was, I think that one was 12 miles.
Wow.
But it was rough, man. It was rough. I was dead after it was all over. I was just, yeah. You know, you have that sense of accomplishment and also why have I put myself through this feeling, you know, like I'm never going to do this again. I never want to do this again.
If you went up 3,000 feet, you were at what elevation? And you were probably about 7,000-8,000 feet.
I think we were at 60. I think I want to say at the base of the Grand Tetons, I want to say it's like 60, 64 to 68, something like that.
Yeah, probably something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then they go up to 13,000 feet.
Okay. I was trying to remember.
So basically we went halfway up.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
There were climbers that we passed both directions that were waiting to be able to get up. There had been a lot of rain and a lot of wind. These guys are climbing with all their gear and they get up there and then they can't, you know, they sleep overnight, but they can't summit. Yeah. They're not allowed to climb because it's too, and there was a lot of ice and snow still up there.
Yeah.
So the combination of the wind and snow and ice, and they were like, nope, you can't climb today. You know, it's a little too dangerous. So yeah, because it's the peaks are beautiful. The peaks are beautiful. I'll show you pictures. But anyway, that's what I did. That's what I did this summer. It was pretty exciting, pretty eventful and relaxing and good. And I'm glad to be back and raring to go.
Good.
Yeah. Well, for those of you that are listening, what did you do this? What did you do this summer? Why don't you go on our Trinity's Facebook page and share with us what you did? And when we have our next podcast, we'll you know, if it's okay, we'll share some of your adventures before we get into whatever topic we come up with for the next time that we get together. One of the things that we wanted to share with you, though, that we're really, really excited about is an opportunity to kind of come together in worship, but also in learning and in growing as disciples of Jesus. And that is
a kitty again. Learning and growing as disciples. Are you talking about IKEA church?
She muted.
Sorry. No, the cat muted me.
Oh my goodness gracious.
You stepped on the keyboard and muted me. Okay. Juju Smith-Schuster, what are you doing? Anyway, I wanted to tell you about and share with you what we're really excited about, and that is IKEA Church. This is an idea that came from something that I had read about, you know, kind of a business model that, of course, the IKEA furniture store had. And why they were so successful. And one of the reasons that they were so successful was, as you know, if you ever go to IKEA, you got to put it together yourself, right? You're buying these kits of whether it's something for the home or for the garage or for, you know, whatever, you put it together. And that's what people love to do. They love to have a hand in building something. And so what we wanted to do was get the people of God together to build a church. Simple as that. We want to put in our own sweat equity to build a church. And so we're really looking forward to getting people together during the 10 o'clock hour we've got different activities for people to do in a time of fellowship and also of learning. And of course, our sermons are also going to hit those themes as well as we go into the into our schedule of 9 o'clock for the streaming service, which you can also attend live, as well as the two services at 11, contemporary and traditional, and then Saturday at 5 o'clock. So it's just a real great opportunity for us all to get together, to be together, to grow together, to learn together, and to build God's church together. And that's really what we want to do as we come into this fall, and as we look forward to what the year is going to bring. Any more thoughts about either IKEA church or what you're hoping for in the fall?
I am really looking forward to IKEA church. So I hope everybody decides to join us on September 12th. Because every week has a theme, every week has a purpose, and it's a great opportunity to reconnect with the church and reconnect with other followers of Jesus this fall. So I hope you join us, because I'm really looking forward to it.
Excellent. I'm looking forward to the diversity of what we are going to be doing and seeing who all is willing to come back out. I think we're going to be facing a fall unlike most falls that we have encountered before in our existence, our individual existence and our existence as a congregation, with the COVID virus coming and going, and now this variant here. I know we were, this summer it was going down, we were all getting excited. Now this variant has come around, and so we're putting some more restrictions back in. But I think that it really seems to me that enough of us are willing to go forward with whatever medical precautions that we have available to us and still meet, because we want that human contact. We want to get together with one another. And that, you know, that's one of the things that that helps us as individuals, helps us as a society, is to have that interaction with other people. The three of us are interacting, you know, right now over the screen, and that's great. But I think we would all agree we have a different dynamic when the three of us are sitting down together in the same room. The same can be said with our members, that you know, come on to worship, come on out to things like IKEA Church, come on out to, we're going to be starting up our Bible studies, we're going to be starting up other non-Sunday morning things. So take precautions, absolutely. And if you don't feel safe to come out, that's fine. We understand that. But I'm really looking forward to trying to get back to doing the one-on-one, that physical interaction with folks.
Yeah, man, that's for sure. And just so everybody knows, because we've gotten some questions from members about this, that the our live streaming service that we do and that we provide is not going to go anywhere. We're going to continue to do a live streaming service. And so that's going to be a part of our ministry, because we recognize that it has a lot of value in people's lives, as they've shared. Some people, you know, are homebound and they can't really get out. It's been a way of being able to connect with them. But it's also been great for people that have been on vacation, who just want to, you know, who are in some other place, but they want to connect with the church. And this is a way that they're able to do that on a Sunday morning. And we're glad to offer that. And we think it's been a really, actually, in a very positive experience for a lot of different people. So we're going to continue to do those sorts of things. And, you know, like I said in the question before, how do we do digital moving forward? Yep. What is it going to look like? Yep. And to continue to push boundaries that way. And I think we're going to continue to do that. And I think our leadership is in a place where they see the value of that and know that we want to continue to do that as well. Well, thank you very much for coming and being a part of our podcast. We're really excited about season two, as I said. You know, I actually missed it this past this past August. I'm really looking forward to having some really great conversations in the future with my two colleagues and some special guests over different times. And I hope you enjoy it as well. So remember, be the church. Jesus is Lord. And make sure you share some good news with the people that are around you. So thanks for joining us. There's going to be a great season two in store for you. So seek the good.
Be the good.
Share the good.
Because good things
come in threes.
Pastor Liz, would you like to give us a blessing?
I would be happy to. The Lord be with you, friends.
And also with you.
Let us pray. Good and gracious God, we give you thanks for rest, relaxation, time with the people that we love. I ask that you would bless and keep all of us as we go into the fall. Be with students and teachers and anyone who works in schools. Be with our staff as we prep for IKEA Church and what comes next. We pray all these things in your son's name. Amen.
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 See y'all. Take care.
Take care. Goodbye.
Bye, friends.